All right, we are live here with a Schloss rant from the Philadelphia suburbs, part two. If you're checking us out here on Spotify or YouTube, this is Schloss rant number 65. All the crazy news, and really all we've talked about so far, is the Giants and Don Martindale. But we got to get into Saban. We got to get into the Michigan Wolverines and the national championship. Then we'll get to some playoff picks as well. There's just so much content right now to be made about all these football stories. All right, so Michigan wins with the national championship. Let's start with that. I had two immediate takes. Number one, this team cheated. They recorded people. There were guys on the sideline misrepresenting who they were. I'm not sure, though, that this is egregious as the 2017 Astros. They clearly were the better team than Washington the other night. They beat Alabama fair and square in overtime, no doubt about that. It's not as bad as the 2017 Astros and the trash cans and the monitors and all that stuff, but there's cheating. And I think that, will this be talked about in 20 years? Probably not. But for the next handful of years, there will be. And really, I guess I have three thoughts because it's all kind of related to the cheating. The other stuff is not as egregious. The first suspension that Jim Harbaugh served early in the year, with the improper benefits and the hamburgers being bought, whatever it was, who cares? It's stupid. You know, if you're going to hold them to that, then you're either the biggest Ohio State fan or you're just a fool. So which one is it? I don't know. I'm not going to get on them about that. But I think you do have a legitimate gripe if you get on Jim Harbaugh about the sign stealing and the putting people in stands and the filming and standing on the sidelines. I think that's legit. And if I'm Jim Harbaugh, though, I think you got to take off and leave. That's thought number three. It's good that you brought a title to the team you played for. It's good that, you know, you made good on your promise. You've been there since 2015. You got your hand, you know, your face beat it in every year by Ohio State until the last three. But I think it's time to move on just because these NCAA allegations and the complications with the NCAA, they're not going to go away. And I understand you can't cheat once you get to the NFL. But I think that even if Harbaugh stayed at Michigan and won another national championship, I think that he's going to be on really close watch by the NCAA. And I don't think it would help increase what his price would be should he go on to the NFL in the future after winning another national championship. I understand that there's this $120 million a year, or sorry, $120 million deal on the table for him if he stays in Michigan. And I think the thing is, though, I think these NFL teams, just from the sheer number of openings that there are, I think they'll line up to give you that. John Gruden got a 10-year, $100 million a year after he left the TV booth. Jim Harbaugh, I understand he didn't win a Super Bowl, and John Gruden did. Harbaugh got it, you know, got the ball. They were down inside that 10-yard line. I think if he runs the ball three straight times with Colin Kaepernick, I think that they score and I think they win the game. They also had a chance to tie that game on a two-point conversion down 31-29, and they can't do it. You know, so, and then, of course, Baltimore, his brother, they kick a field goal to go up 34-29 before that, and they get to 31 basically by Jim or John Harbaugh, the Ravens, taking a safety because they're down deep in their own zone. And, you know, made sense at the time, obviously. And that's why it was a 3-point game, not a 5-point game. And that's, of course, why they had that chance to run the ball in and score. But you get the idea. If he runs the ball in with Kaepernick, and I think about this all the time, I think I mentioned it before, he runs the ball in with Kaepernick, we're talking about a guy who wins a Super Bowl. So he's a much better coach, and his record shows it. He was like 49-22. His worst season of the four, he was 8-8. You know, he loses in 2011 in the NFC title game to my New York Football Giants after his returner, Kyle Williams, drops a punt. You know, but they hung tough with the Giants that game. The next year, of course, they make the Super Bowl. The year after that, they lose in the NFC championship game to the Seahawks and Russell Wilson the year that they won the Super Bowl. That's the, you know, the Richard Sherman, the famous interview with Aaron Andrews, try me on a sorry receiver against Crabtree, and that's the result you're going to get. So he's every bit the coach. I bring all this up because he's every bit the coach that John Gruden was, and much better. And don't tell me you know, oh, Gruden won a Super Bowl and he didn't. I mean, listen, Gruden beat his old team. He knew all the plays. So he's every bit. I'd move on if I was him to say all this. You got the Chargers, Raiders, Falcons, Seahawks, maybe even the Patriots. Who knows? You got all types of teams. And if it's really all about the money, I mean, this is going to sound really ridiculous. Have your agent put out a feeler to Alabama. I don't think he would do that. But that's an upgraded job. I think Alabama is a much better job than Michigan. I think you're in the SEC. So maybe that's on the table too. Probably not. This is just pure speculation. And let's do Saban now. Then we'll swing back to talk about the rest of the teams and the openings in the NFL. With Saban being out in Alabama, all right, listen. Guy's an incredible coach. You didn't need me to tell you that. He won a title in more than one out of every three of his years there. He was every bit better than Bear Bryant. And I think from all accounts, he's leaving really just because of the NIL and the transfer portal. That's what broke this guy. Wasn't trying to beat rivals like LSU and Georgia and Auburn, all schools that won a national title. And you can throw Florida in the mix too. All schools that won national titles during his great dominance while he was with Alabama. But I think the fact that the NFL, you know, there's free agency and there's the draft, but with this transfer portal and with this NIL, it's kind of the wild, wild west, because even in the NFL, the draft picks, the money's all slotted. Not much you can negotiate, maybe offset language, you know, maybe other perks for family members, you know, and staffers. I don't know. But I think that that's ultimately what broke Saban. And I think that my first thought, though, honestly, was that Saban's still early 70s. Maybe he wanted to go try in the NFL again. He almost became the Giants coach before. That's been out there. He wasn't a total flop with Miami. He beat Belichick a couple of times while Belichick was in that heyday with the Pats. So my immediate thought was maybe he'd go to the NFL because, again, yes, there's free agency in the draft, but things are kind of a lot more regulated. Not kind of, they are way more regulated than college football, and maybe it would be more about coaching football, which is what he thought he was signing up for while being the head coach at Alabama. And one other thing to remember with Saban, because you can talk all you want about the replacements, people who Alabama is going to look to bring in, whether it's Dabo Swinney, who played at Alabama, you know, whoever, whether it's bringing Lane Kiffin back, who was a coordinator with Alabama. And I think Lane might do a good job because I think he's got confidence to step into that role. But the one thing to remember, and I haven't heard a single soul talk about this, because it's easy to talk about how great of a coach he is. We all know. We all know he put tons of guys in the NFL, specifically really good receivers, obviously, with Julio Jones, Devonta Smith, and Heisman Trophy winners. You know, Devonta Smith won a Heisman as a wide receiver in Alabama. That's easy to talk about. But again, I've been teasing this for a minute here, but the athletic director at Alabama is Greg Byrne. Why do I know his name? Because I'm not the biggest college guy, but he was the athletic director at the University of Arizona. The last football coach that this guy hired was Kevin Sumlin, who on the way out the door in 2020 lost to freaking ASU by 65 points. More, it might have been more. It was 70-7 maybe. 63 points. All right, if that's what it was. So I wouldn't be so confident that Greg Byrne is the right guy. No offense, Greg, to be leading the charge to finding the replacement. You better hope that Saban's got a replacement picked out. If the timing lined up, honestly, if Daboll, you know, wasn't secure with the Giants, I'd say maybe even he would go there. He was a coordinator with him. And from what I was hearing with Gary Danielson and Mad Dog today is he might look at a guy with some NFL experience. So it's tough to find, you know, a true fit. But maybe one of these college guys gets – or maybe one of these guys gets fired and you bring him in. And it's not ideal, but maybe Sirianni gets fired. I'm just making this up. Maybe Sirianni gets fired with the Eagles, which I wouldn't do. Sirianni's a great coach. You know, he took Hurts to the playoffs. He helped develop Jalen Hurts. But let's say he gets fired. Maybe he wants to go to Alabama. You never know. But if I'm Saban, I have – I make sure I'm heavily involved in picking the replacement, because Greg Byrne has not shown you that he can hire successful football coaches. I don't remember if he was the one who hired Rich Rod. Rich Rod was a good coach at Arizona. Rich Rod took Arizona to New Year's Six bowl games, or a New Year's Six bowl game against Boise State. But I don't know if he hired Rich Rod. He hired Kevin Sumlin, and he was a bust. So I'd be careful with who I'm picking out and how much power I give him in the selection process. All right, now let's move on to Bill Belichick. It's amazing that these two guys, and even throw Carroll in the mix, all are out, you know, within 36 hours of one another, maybe even less. Listen, with Belichick, all right, because I've been following this guy since he was roaming the Jets sideline. Yes, the Jets. That was when I was first made aware of who this guy was, when he was roaming the Jets sideline, because I wasn't old enough to remember him with the Giants and Parcells. I didn't realize that he was with – I remember 1996, that Super Bowl, Green Bay in New England. He was on that 96 Patriots staff. You know, and I think that was a big reason if we're going to, you know, go all the way back to 2020 or 2000, why he went to New England, because the Jets, and I know I'm really going all over the place here, but the Jets, I think it's important to do the history. The Jets, the owner, Leon Hess, he sold the team to the Johnson family, right? And Belichick had an agreement with the Hess family to be the Jets head coach after Parcells left. And he wasn't comfortable working for the Johnsons, but he had been with the Patriots as a defensive back coach, assistant coach, and calling the plays on defense with Parcells and the Patriots in 96. The other, like I said, went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Packers. So he had even a small relationship, but he had a relationship and knew Robert Kraft. And that's what led him to resign as head coach of the Jets then. You know, Belichick had been head coach of the Jets two different times without ever coaching a game, if you remember. And he resigned, of course, and they worked out a trade. But I think, though, with Belichick, again, you don't need me to tell you how great of a coach he was. You don't need me to tell you that there's probably never going to be another guy to be like this. But we gave you the beginning of his origins with the Patriots. Now we're going to break down the ending because I think that's a little more intriguing. Bill Belichick was in charge of personnel, and Robert Kraft said, listen, he wasn't going to make him just coach the team, and he was going to take away the personnel control, that it's time to move on. Understandable. He has every right to move on. It's his team. But I think the fact that Belichick picking the personnel, not getting offensive players, they had a solid defense this year. I think they were like a top five defense. But he was so lost offensively in picking these players. They cut Bailey Zappe in the offseason, right, as camp broke out. And my thought at the time was to give Mac Jones some confidence that Zappe wasn't breathing down him, because Zappe had made some appearances in 2022 and looked, you know, not great, but reasonable. Guy who can definitely, you could play. And it turns out, though, they bring back Bailey Zappe because Mac Jones stinks. And Zappe, the more you saw him later on in the season, he stunk too. So that's really the genesis of it. He could coach on defense, but he couldn't pick the players out. And for him going forward, there's two things that I'm doing. I am 100,000% getting Josh McDaniels back on board to be the offensive coordinator. Say what you want about that guy as a head coach, a poor coach with the Raiders and the Broncos, you know, 12, 13 years ago. But he made Mac Jones look like a Pro Bowl level quarterback in 2021, and they took them to the playoffs. They lost to the Bills pretty easily, but led them to respectability. So he needs a guy he can trust to run the offense. And he's got to go to a team with a quarterback. And I think that if you check the Chargers, who got the quarterback in place for sure, at least the guy who's got all the talent in the world, I think that's a great fit, because you bring him to a city and a team that really has nothing from the coaching side. They always go cheap. Anthony Lynn and Mike McCoy and the guy that they fired, who I don't even remember. They just plucked him off McVay's staff. But you bring in a big-time coach to go with this quarterback, bring in a guy who, say what you want about him, he's shown he can coach quarterbacks, Josh McDaniels. You bring him in, I think you got something there with the Chargers for sure. And I understand it's going to be talked about with him with the Commanders, because he goes back to an area he has some ties with. He grew up in Maryland, obviously. He was a, yes, Baltimore Colts assistant coach very, very early on in his career. I think 1975 he started off there. So you give him a shot maybe in that area, but I don't love the fit for him, because, again, you don't have the quarterback. So I wouldn't go there if I was him. Wouldn't go to the Raiders. I understand with him and Tom Brady being in the mix, Brady a part owner, I don't think that that's really a great idea either. Falcons, again, they've got some talent. We all saw it. Bijan Robinson, Drake London out there, receiver. People seem to like Pitts. I'm not really sure what he does. But they don't have a quarterback either. Titans, they don't have a quarterback. Is he really going to coach Geno Smith and the Seahawks? So I think the Chargers makes the most sense for him. And all these candidates, whether it be him, Vrabel, Harbaugh, Chargers probably make the most sense for all of them. And that's because of number 10, Justin Herbert. But I think with the Patriots, I think, and Belichick, to swing back to this, I think it's important to say that, yeah, Brady won that Super Bowl without him in Tampa Bay with Bruce Arians as his coach. But I think that you could definitely argue Brady doesn't win all six of those titles without Belichick. Don't go misconstruing it. And they could have won more, of course. Of course, you factor in those two giant ones. But then you also factor in the Falcon one and the Seahawk one where – so those probably even out. But at any rate, I don't think that Brady wins six of them in New England without Belichick there. At least give us that, you know, give me some credit there. Give Belichick really the credit there. No, it's uncomfortable to credit him because he's the evil genius. But I think it's appropriate to credit him for some of those titles, even if you say Brady was really the indispensable one. And that's really because none of these great guys have ever won in the NFL without a quarterback. The closest I would ever argue is, what was his name? Gibbs with Washington. But he had Ripien, who was an MVP the one year. He had Joe Theismann, who was a legit quarterback. I'm talking all based on this off of YouTube and NFL Network and NFL Films. And then Doug Williams, okay, wasn't a star, and he won with him. That's really the best argument you can give. But you're not talking about winning, you know, multitudes of titles as the New England Patriots and Belichick won without having the quarterback right. So I think that goes without saying, and you have to at least admit that Belichick was a big part of developing Brady because they got there the same year in New England. I understand Bledsoe was there and played for 2000 and the first handful of games there in 01. And people forget in 01, and I know I'm all over the place here with the history, people forget in that 01 AFC title game versus the Steelers, Bledsoe started that game because Brady was injured. So Belichick had something to do with it. It wasn't all 100% Brady. You know, it was 99.9, but Belichick helped get them there. All right, now let's talk about some of these other coaches. The Seattle Seahawks moving on from Pete Carroll. I don't like this move at all. It doesn't make sense. He's been 9-8 the past 2 years. I know that's not a great record, but factor in what I just said where you're not winning if you don't have a great quarterback. He's had Geno Smith. Geno Smith didn't look good with the Giants. He didn't look good with the Jets. Much longer stint with the Jets. He was a backup with, you know, Seattle and the Chargers. He got something out of him. All right, and that's more, you know, that's more than you can say than what a lot of other coaches would have done. And you can tell me, all right, you're firing him because he's 72 years old. Dude, look at that guy running around. He's got a full head of hair. He's got all the energy in the world. He relates to players still. He's not, you know, stuck in the past, you know, talking about picking up the landline and sending a fax and reading the Seattle, you know, Post-Gazette. I don't know what the newspaper's called there. You know, waiting for that paper to get delivered to him. So say what you want about Pete Carroll. I wouldn't have moved on from him. Their under over this year for them was 9.5. They won 9. It wasn't like they massively underachieved. Would you like to see them in the playoffs? Yeah, sure, but they beat Philly late in the year before Philly totally fell apart. So, I mean, he's still reaching these young 23 to 32-year-olds who were playing in the league. Doesn't make sense for me to move on from him. Who are you hiring that's better than him? And, again, we're going to bring up the age, but I think NFL is always win now. Go win now. Even if he's only there 2 or 3 more years, go win now. I would bring him in if I was someone else. He's been linked, you know, the rumors with the Chargers are obvious because he coached at USC. And I think you bring him in maybe to, if you don't go with Belichick, if you're the Chargers, if you bring him in, you establish some type of toughness. And I think the same thing would be true with Harbaugh, with Vrabel. I think these are just old school, line them up, smack the pads guys. It's funny with Harbaugh, he's thought of to be an offensive guy. And I know I'm really bouncing all over the place, but when I think of him, I think of physical football on both sides, and I think of dominating the lines. So I think that bringing in a physical coach with the Chargers, I think is a great move. And to steal a line from Colin Cowherd, this is kind of like an old saying, in a glamour city, you really need a non-glamorous coach to kind of even it out. So I think all those guys, Harbaugh, Belichick, Vrabel, Pete Carroll, these are not like glamour guys. These are tough guys who cut their teeth on defense. And Harbaugh, who, you know, quarterback in the NFL, but a guy who wants to play super physical, coming from the Big Ten especially now. So I think if you bring any of those guys in there, the Chargers, you can't go wrong. I think about Pat Riley coaching the Lakers, the Knicks, and the Heat. There's probably not three more glamorous cities in the entire United States. But Pat Riley got the most out of those teams. Pat Riley from Schenectady, New York. Look it up if you don't know where that is, outside of Albany. That, you know, he's not a guy who grew up in glamour. And he, you know, he won championships with the Lakers, championships with the Heat, still continues to build really solid organizations. And even the Knicks, he took them to a final. So I don't know where all these teams go. One thing with the Commanders, I don't love that Bob Myers, though, is advising. Bob Myers, of course, the former Golden State GM. I wouldn't want that out there if I was Harris, the owner of the Commanders, who also owns my New Jersey Devil franchise and the Sixer team right here. Football is a different beast than basketball. And I understand with some of these head coaches, you're hiring a CEO, quote unquote. Football's just such a different beast. It's so much different than baseball. It's so much different than basketball. And, I mean, Paul DePodesta, this was a baseball executive who they brought in to run the Cleveland Browns in like 2016 and 2017. They flopped fat on their face. I don't think they won a game in one of those years. So I can't have a basketball guy advising on who's going to pick my coach. Raiders, of course, they have an opening. Kind of. Pierce is the interim guy. And I know Pierce, they received permission to interview him for Tennessee. I'm going to be over the top and biased in my analysis for Pierce because he's an Arizona Wildcat. He won a Super Bowl alongside his fellow Arizona Wildcat, Michael Johnson, the safety. I don't think he really stuck in the league very long, but he went to Arizona. Both guys won Super Bowl 42. And I think you got to bring him back. I know Harbaugh is out there, but the players responded to him. He went 5-4. He beat the Chiefs, and the Chiefs had really had something to play for there. They could still get the number two or maybe even outside shot at the number one seed. He's got Patrick Graham there to run his defense. I think if he can find an offensive guy to develop Aiden O'Connell or to find a new quarterback, then they're not going to have the best pick, of course, because they won 8 games. He doesn't, in my opinion, these are just things working against him. He doesn't have real strong connections because he was brought on by McDaniels. His experience primarily is in high school in Long Beach, California. And, of course, he worked with Herman Edwards at Arizona State, and he knew Herman from TV with ESPN. But one guy who this is, again, no one's talking about this but me because I do the research. I put the time in. I map out where guys have been, who their connections might be. But one guy who I'd love to see him bring in if he stays with the Raiders is, whatchamacallit, what's his name over there? Greasy. Not Bob Greasy. Brian Greasy. There you go. Brian Greasy. Those guys worked together at ESPN for a while. So maybe they have a relationship. Maybe they have a connection. And I say this because he's Brock Purdy's quarterback coach with San Francisco. Would you say he's done a pretty good job? Yeah, I certainly would. So maybe he brings him over. That's a promotion. I don't see Shanahan holding him back from that. You know, they'd have to request permission, obviously, after the postseason or after they win the Super Bowl. But I think that's an upgrade over the current guy who's also an interim guy, Bo Hardigree. I mean, because this was his only year calling the plays after McDaniels was fired. So, and that McDaniels coaching tree, whatever there is of it, you can't touch them. So, I mean, maybe you bring in Bill O'Brien too. That's another guy who'd be kind of like a cousin to Pierce as far as coaching trees go there. But I think, yeah, if you bring in Brian Greasy to call the plays after the work he's done with Purdy, I think you got yourself a real staff there. I think if you go get yourself a quarterback, develop someone, because maybe your scouts identify a solid guy later on and you do what's been able to be done with Brock Purdy. They've got some talented players there. I mean, you got a running back in Jacobs. Maybe they bring him back off a one-year deal, but you of course have Devontae Adams. He can still play. So I think that's a no-brainer. If you're going to keep Pierce, reach out to the 49ers and bring in Greasy, who I think he has a relationship with. Bring him in. Now, the Falcons, they were right to fire Arthur Smith. You go 7-10 for 3 straight years. That's just the definition of bad to mediocre. 7-9 used to be mediocre, but 7-10 we'll call bad to mediocre. needed to at least win 9 games, show some type of promise to keep your job. Arthur Blank is like 82 years old. He's regarded as a good owner for the most part. I think he'll probably spend the money. I don't know if I'm Jim Harbaugh, if I'm leaving Michigan for that. I wouldn't mind seeing Vrabel go there. The thing is, when you Google like top head coaching candidates, you're going to get the obvious guys. You're going to get Belichick. You're going to get Vrabel. You're going to get Harbaugh. And everyone else is really just a coordinator. If you're Ben Johnson, maybe you want to go there, the Lions offensive coordinator. But really, we're just throwing guys out there. You know, McDonald, the guy with the Ravens, is another guy. We're just throwing names out there of coordinators. I don't think that's as fun to talk about coordinators, because I think being a head coach in the National Football League, it's really about so much more than being a really good play caller on either the offensive or defensive end. Do you have the personality? Do you have the stick-with-itness to lead groups of men and be the face of the organization when things are down, when things aren't working out great? And the one thing that I've said time after time again, I don't care how good of a play caller you were on offense or defense, put the stupid play sheet down and coach the whole team. That includes the kickers, punters, and long snappers. Coach the team. Be aware. Don't focus on just one side of the ball. I've said this time and time again. It drives me nuts. And I understand offense is the way of the world in the NFL, but it drives me nuts when I see these head coaches holding the diner menu-sized offensive play sheet. Put the sheet down and go coach the team. Drives me nuts when I see that. Titans, I don't love the fact that they fired Vrabel. I understand he's 6-18 in his last 24 games. After, of course, they started 7-3 last year, and the year before that, they were the number one seed at 12-5. He's still 9 games over 500. Maybe he goes to New England. That's an obvious relationship because he played for the Pats and won 3 Super Bowls, played outside linebacker and, you know, some tight end, even on goal line situations. And again, I would love the fit for him with the Chargers. Just a tough guy. Buckle your chin strap. Go hit people hard. Knock them out. So I think he'd be a hit there with the Chargers, make that team a little tougher. But I don't love firing these guys. I don't know who you're bringing in that's better. Again, I don't love just, you know, hiring the big-time play caller. I would lean offense if I'm picking out guys. I would lean a guy who's been an offensive coordinator. But I really would look for special traits, not just did your team run the best offense. It's okay if you were like the 4th best offense. But do you have what it takes to be a head coach and not just a play caller? A lot of guys are really good play callers. North Turner was a good play caller, not a great head coach. Tom Coughlin was a great head coach. Bill Parcells was a great head coach. Bill Belichick, yeah, an amazing defensive coordinator, but a great head coach. It's different. It's different. I mean, even like Sirianni, I know people are down on him with the Eagles here. Sirianni's a really good head coach, ideally. He's not a guy who's a play-calling specialist. Sirianni, in an ideal world where they don't tailspin, he's a great head coach. So I think look for guys that can motivate people. Don't just hire the hot coordinator. That's lazy, hiring the hot coordinator. I mean, even look at the Ravens. John Harbaugh, he was a special teams coordinator. Coached defensive backs for the Eagles, and then they brought him in as a head coach. So sometimes you think out of the box. Sometimes, you know, you bring in Joe Judge as a special team coordinator. It doesn't work out. I get that. But, again, it's more than just calling the best plays. So a lot of openings. Falcons, Seahawks, Titans, Chargers, Patriots, Raiders possibly, Commanders. I mean, there's a lot of teams where it's open. And we didn't even talk about Carolina because we can talk about Carolina. I wouldn't be so scared to go there. I think Tepper knows that he probably has to be on his best behavior, the owner. And you can't just be firing people left and right. And you could say, oh, you get a big payday, you go there. But these guys want to be head coaches. It's not just all about taking the most money. Yeah, you want to get paid. But it's not all about taking the most money. But I do think Tepper will be on his best behavior because I think that he'll realize, and it might be tough, but he'll realize that you can't go firing the coach every year. I mean, he moved off of Matt Rhule real quick, moved off of Frank Reich, which I don't know if I love Frank Reich going there to begin with. I would have said, you know, he did an okay job with the Colts, took him to the playoffs, but I wouldn't have rushed right back into this job. They clearly fumbled the draft pick. I mean, maybe Bryce Young shows you a little more, but they messed up by not taking Stroud, and that's probably why he got fired. So that's the head coaching scenario there. Now, we talked about Saban, of course. We talked about all these NFL coaches. Let's move on, though. Before we talk about the playoffs, the biggest disappointment, I want to throw this out there, is that the Jaguars going 8-3, starting 8-3, then finishing 9-8 out of the playoffs, Dolphins blowing a three-game lead in the division, or the Eagles going from 10-1 to 11-6, especially throwing in the fact they lost to the Cardinals and the Giants to close out the year. So I think those are things to watch. Now, rating the games that I would watch this weekend. Number one, I'm most pumped up for Rams at Lions. Number two is Packers at the Cowboys. Three is Dolphins at the Chiefs. Four is Pittsburgh at Buffalo. I think anytime I can watch Josh Allen, that's great, but I don't love it. Eagles at Bucks has the potential to just be a dumpster fire. Browns at Texans is number six. I thought about not making this dead last, but I don't love the Texans. You know, there's something about that field for me. So I have this combined with fields and start times. You know, to me, the Texans stadium doesn't look great on TV. I don't know what it is. And, you know, nature is kind of healing, though, because the Texans are back in that Saturday 4:30 playoff game. That's where they belong. They've been in the playoffs a lot. The Texans have not been a total disgraceful franchise, but pretty much every time they're in the playoffs, their divisional round is that 4:30 Saturday game. So it's nice to have them in there, I guess, even though I don't love the way the stadium looks on TV. I'm not all that intrigued by C.J. Stroud yet. I think he's a really good quarterback. I'm just not sure how interesting he is. You know, you watch Josh Allen, you never know what he's going to do. You watch Jalen Hurts, he can run all over the place. That Rams-Lions matchup is number one just because I'm not sure how Dan Campbell's going to screw this up with all this going for it. And I love the storyline between Stafford and Goff. Packers-Cowboys, like I said, is number two. Anytime you have these two historic franchises playing, you got to bump it up high. Number three, I mean, just the sheer fact, like I mentioned in part one, where how many people are going to not know where the game is. But Tyreek Hill going back to Kansas City is great. Mahomes, got to love watching him, whether you root for him or not. Pittsburgh-Buffalo, like I said, you got Allen. Eagles, I mean, it's going to be a dumpster fire, so you can't look away. All right, now the Super Bowl matchups I would like to see. Browns versus Lions is number one, if everything works out. This is the one America needs, point blank. Number two is Bills versus Lions. The Bills have never won, even though they've been. I mean, Walmart's in Las Vegas. You better stock up on those tables because they're going to be putting people through it. They're going to put each other on fire and jump through it. They're going to put ketchup and mustard all over the place you've seen on TV. Number three is Browns versus 49ers. The Browns are honestly a team that no one has the beef with unless you're a Ravens or Steelers or Bengals fan. I'd like to see this rematch because they played earlier on in the year in better weather conditions and see what Flacco can do. The story of Joe Flacco continues. See what they can do. Number four is 49ers versus Bills. This is what I picked preseason, so I'm a little biased there. But it would be great to see that 49ers power zone running against Josh Allen and the Bills, Superman Josh Allen. So I'd like to see that. And number five, Ravens 49ers. We were cheated out of what should have been a good game on Christmas night, so I wouldn't mind seeing that again. And then number six, it's not going to happen, Pittsburgh versus the Cowboys. I hate the Cowboys, but the storylines would be great. You have one of the best out-of-conference rivalries in the NFL. They haven't met in the Super Bowl since Super Bowl 30. All right, last thing, the picks for the week. We're going to pass on the Packers-Cowboy game. Something about that +7.5 number, and it might be down to +7. It makes it hard for me to make a pick. So we're going to give you five games. And after this, once we go into a lesser number of games, we're going to have to throw in an under or over. But the five games, we're going to pick the five games outside of the Packers-Cowboys. Start with the first game. Browns minus the 2.5 at the Texans. I'm going to take the Browns here. We've all heard the stats about how the first-time quarterback, especially rookie quarterback, is going to struggle in his first-time game, especially going up against a guy like Joe Flacco, albeit a while ago, with all that playoff experience. I think Myles Garrett versus Laremy Tunsil on the outside is going to be a great matchup to watch. Tunsil, of course, the left tackle for Houston. But I think that Stroud, from what I saw, he struggles against the blitz. So give me the Browns laying the 2.5 on the road. Next one, Dolphins at the Chiefs. I'm picking the Chiefs laying 4. Check whether it's -4.5, but maybe a 4 is still out there. When I was making my notes earlier today, it was. So we'll try to take a look for that. I like the Chiefs only because of the fact that the weather is going to come into play here, and I'm not sure if the Dolphins are going to be able to handle it. Miami is a team, they've lost their last 10 when it's below 40. They're expecting wind chills to be around minus 10, minus 15 with the temperature about 5. I don't love laying points with KC. They've shown you this all year. They weren't as bad as you would think, ATS. They were 9-7 against the number this year, 4-4 at home, but they were only covering that spread on average by less than a point a game. So not a lot of wiggle room, so really important to find the best of that number. We're going to go with it at minus 4 if we can get it. If not, you know, we'll change it to minus 4, obviously. Higher juice. Steelers at the Bills. Listen, Bills laying the 10. I'm picking the Bills. I don't care if this is a square spot. I think that these double-digit favorites have overall have done pretty well this year. I'm making a decision point blank that even with the 10 points, I'm not backing Mason Rudolph. I don't have much behind it other than that. Rams plus the 3 at the Lions. I love the Rams plus the 3. I get the better coach, possibly the better quarterback. Their numbers have been pretty identical since they were traded for each other. A team that's only lost once since they started 3-6, and that was to Baltimore. And that was an overtime on a special teams play. And Baltimore, of course, has just pummeled everyone else. So I get the, you know, I get them a little more rested after they sat out a little bit last week. Laporta for the Lions was banged up when they played. Everyone went all out. And I get the 3 points. So sign me up there, Rams plus 3. Eagles minus 3 at Tampa. Eagles are minus 10 on the turnover margin all year, where the Bucs are plus 8 for the season, you know, the turnovers versus their opponent. Eagles, though, are minus 8 in their last 7, or sorry, the last 6 games, while they've lost 5 out of the last 6, while Tampa is plus 4 in the turnover margin. So I think a little bit of evening out is going to occur here. I probably said this already, but this is a big-time buy-low spot for the Eagles. They can't beat Tampa by a field goal here, or more than a field goal. I don't know what to tell you. And I'm not going to take Baker Mayfield. So I know he's burned me. I picked the Jags a few weeks ago against them. He came out and dominated. But give me here the Eagles laying the 3 points. Wild card weekend, all the coaching. We didn't even have time to talk about the Knicks. We'll have to do that later on as they continue to be 5-0 with OG Anunoby in the lineup. They play Dallas tonight. Should be an interesting challenge for them with against Luka Doncic. But Schloss Rant, live Philadelphia suburbs. Enjoy all the football this week. We'll see you later, everyone.